As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Copa with Felipe Cardenas. Welcome back, actually. This is my second episode, and my guest today is Carl Wurzwick. He's a British journalist who's based in Bogota, Colombia, specializing in Colombian football. You can find his work at The Guardian. He writes for World Soccer Magazine. He's an excellent follow on Twitter, trust me, and we're going to get into that. I'm going to read some of his tweets. He doesn't know that, but we're going to read his tweets as well. Carl, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great. Of course, you know, as we're talking about offline, I mean, being a foreign correspondent is just, it's something that fascinates me. I think that life has always been one that intrigues me as well. And you were the first person I thought of. You're in Colombia, you're covering the game in Colombia, men's and women's football. We were talking offline. You're from the north of England, born in Preston. You're an Aston Villa supporter. But why did you decide to move to Colombia and to become a foreign correspondent? How did that work out?
Well, it's a long story. I was working in London for a newspaper, and they were pretty political. So they sent me to the Copa America in 2007, which was held in Venezuela. I'd always been very into football, but that sort of melting pot of football and politics at the time, Hugo Chavez had been the first Venezuelan president to really start using football, because it's a massively baseball country. And I was based in just down by the border, San Cristobal, and I had 5 days free. So I took the temptation was too much to cross the border into Colombia. I don't know, something hit me. I just thought, you know, ever since I was a kid, I was interested in living somewhere else, learning about a new culture, and it had to be something completely different. I didn't want something, you know, Australia, a bit like a very British culture, but with a bit more sun. I wanted something completely new change with a football culture. And a year later, took the decision, right, okay, it's now or never. And then I got a girlfriend, and plans got shifted a little bit. And then, yeah, 2010, I took the plunge. And the original plan was to come out for a year, see how it went, and everything I wanted to do in that year, nothing got done, because I was juggling way too many things, learning Spanish and trying to earn some money, and getting established as a journalist too. But I'd had those seven years in London, working mainly in politics, but also had been interested in football too, and I've been writing for the newspaper about football, but mainly about those football political stuff that are always interlinked.
So what, I mean, other than learning the language, you had to learn Spanish, you had to get used to South American culture. And as you know now, every country has its own culture. It's very different from Venezuela to Colombia. There are a lot of similarities, but there are differences as well. What has been, in these 12 years, I believe, that you've been in Colombia, what has been the most rewarding aspect for you, and what has been the biggest challenge perhaps?
I think being able to control what I write about for me has been the most rewarding thing, and just the unexpected nature of not knowing where and then it, well not not knowing where my next project's going to be, and having the whole country to go and dive into some really incredible stories that I wouldn't get that freedom, I don't think. For example, when I was working in London, I was told, right, you have to write about this train strike that's going on today. And okay, right, off I go. And whereas here, it's up to me to control that. And yeah, the South Columbia is very colourful. Life has been a massive, it sounds like a real big cliche, but it is a, every day is an adventure. You just don't know what's around the corner. And yeah, it's just been a real change for me, and having to battle with certain cultural aspects as well has been tough. But I think on the whole, I don't regret any of it. Despite at the beginning, it was very frustrating not being able to speak Spanish fully and wanting to do things. But yeah, little by little, I've been building myself up, and I'm in a position now where I can control what I write about. I lost you. I think I've lost you.
I'm there. I hear you. So, Carl, I do want to get to your coverage of the Women's Copa America that just recently finished. But before, let's go back a year. Copa America 2021 was set mm-hmm. to be hosted in Colombia, co-hosted between Colombia and Argentina. You know, COVID was not under control at the time in both countries, and then violent protests broke out throughout Colombia 30 days before the tournament. I covered the story here from the United States. Initial reports had almost 50 dead due to the protests. You were on the ground, though. I remember seeing your coverage. You saw everything up close and personal. So what was your approach like as a football journalist covering that story? And just what did you see?
Well, it was impossible to miss because it was everywhere. But we've got to remember they didn't erupt overnight. Those protests that happened 30 days before the tournament, they began brewing a long time before that, before the pandemic. In fact, in 2019, there were massive protests, and there were the deaths also. The police infamously murdered one of the protesters, and that was never resolved. And the real core reason why these protests rumbled on, and then, I should say, 30 days before the tournament began, was because Colombians didn't see that their lives were getting any better. They were getting worse. And this is one of the most unequal countries in the world. And the pandemic really exacerbated those problems. The government just proved to be very deaf. Lived in a bubble, didn't really ever connect with listening to the frustrations of everyday people. And we've recently seen a massive shift politically, the first time ever Colombia have jumped left in 200 years, which when I arrived 10 years ago was unthinkable. Talking to people about politics, that just was never, ever going to happen. So it really has showed how much Colombia has changed. But 30 days before the tournament, yeah, I think a lot of people thought that, what are we doing? Why the hell are we having a football tournament and putting on this sporting event and celebration of our country when we can't even feed our people? So I think that became one of the many, many demands that we shouldn't be doing this right now, that it would be great to have it in the future. And Colombia had only ever won that tournament once when it was held on home soil. And in the end, the government were forced into a rather humbling climb down and cancel the tournament. Well, gave the tournament to another country. So at the last minute, which was, yeah, and didn't go down well within those political circles. And yeah, it was hairy at times. It was quite scary to see, because I don't think for a lot of people, they just felt that we've not got anything to lose here, because things are that bleak.
It was bad. I mean, just being Colombian from afar, it was tragic to see. I have family there. I have friends there. You're getting reports of people not wanting to leave their house, violence breaking out in nice neighborhoods. It wasn't just in sort of the more poverty stricken parts of the country. It was really everywhere. But you know, a year goes by, almost 2 years go by, and all of a sudden, Colombia is once again in this a very similar position, set to host an international tournament, this time the women's Copa America for the first time. You covered the tournament. It was, for all intents and purposes, based on perhaps the output from the fans that supported the host Colombia, the stadiums were full. But, you know, I think it was just a week before the tournament started, the Women's Football League in Colombia was canceled. So how critical a situation is it for women's football? And did the success of the Copa America, will that change anything in Colombia for women?
It was actually a day before league held. The day before the league held the regular meeting and decided that we'd like to do it, but there just isn't any money. And this has been a constant excuse for years and years. And of course, it's a bit more complicated than that. It needs the will of the clubs as well and other the sponsors. But there has always been the sense that the league aren't really interested in promoting women's football. And it's not just me saying that. I mean, these words have literally come out of the mouths of some of the people who are running Colombian football, that they just don't see it as a viable option and aren't willing to invest in it because this isn't something that you start today and tomorrow it's a money-making operation. No, like the men's game, it took over 100 years for it to become the beast, the money-making beast that it is now. So that was a huge blow because, I mean, talking of the Colombian team, which I covered in particular, they of the 22 players that they had in the squad, 11 of them lost their job. And so on the league said, oh, we'll put on a little bit of a mini tournament just so that you can keep fitness up before the Copa Libertadores kicks off. But that still means that 11 months of the year, you don't have any regular football. So there are so many stories, so many interesting stories. This is what I came to realize during the tournament. So a little bit what I was doing, I was making a six-part documentary on women's football for FIFA. Well, they were one of the partners in it that is going to go out next year. Yes, a really, really great project, I think, called The Road to Australia and New Zealand. And so we went behind the scenes and tried to find out, like, what was it like for a woman or a girl growing up in Colombia wanting to play football? And the hurdles that they had to overcome are incredible. I mean, this story is quite common in the men's game as well, the rags to riches story. But here, you don't even have your support from your family because girls shouldn't be playing football. And we found that time and time again. And there are a lot of girls and women who also have to take to working in second jobs. There's one player who's a refuse collector in her spare time. There are other girls who sell food on the side of the street. And this is, some of the things that they're up against. So a day before, that was cancelled. And as the players came out for the national anthem, they'd already released a video an hour or two before. A silent process, really, with them all just raising their arms and in a sort of defiant sign of protest. And that's what they did during the national anthem. Even in Colombian media, this was brushed aside as like, oh, look, they're going to be victorious at this tournament. No. This has had a political meaning, but they know that they can't come out to do, reveal a logo or something like that because this has happened before and players have been blacklisted. There are several players. And Colombia did very, very well in this Copa America. They got to the final and gave Brazil, who were on a different level in South America, they gave them a really good game. But this, they had mysteriously, curiously, several players missing from their squad. Some of the top players who were playing in Europe, Jorella Rincon, who is arguably one of their greatest players of all time, playing in the Italian league, top assist maker last season. And all the players that were missing in 2018, I think it was, came out and said, enough is enough. There are so many problems and we're going to come out and reveal some of them. And curiously, some of them, all those players are now axed from the national team. So, to answer your question of whether this will change things, I think already things are changing. On a grassroots level, people are interested in the women's game. We saw with the league final last year, America de Cali against Deportivo Cali, the stadium was full. People are interested in it, and they see in the women's game a humility and someone to support that have faced everything and are still fighting. And I think that's a great message for the women's game, and I think it's something that a lot of people can identify with, because it's something that they are going through in their everyday lives with all the protests and things like that. So I think it, yeah, from the base, there is something changing. The real question is whether at the top of the Football Federation, because this is the case for the men's game as well, but it is a close shop. There are basically about 36 teams, 36 presidents, and they control the sport. It's a private entity, as they always remind us, and that they make the rules. And so there's no freshness of ideas. There's nobody there to put pressure on them, because they just run the show with the same people as always, and the sons then come in and their friends come in. So that's going to be the main barrier to change. But with the new government, Gustavo Petro, the new president, has already said that the first priority of his Ministry of Sport will be to create a women's league that will last, that won't be just, you know, made up on the eve of the tournament, and that there will be proper wages, and there will be a proper structure and a proper calendar, because the leagues that we've seen so far have just been so ad hoc, games played at 9 o'clock in the morning on awful pitches and behind closed doors. Last season, every single game except the final was played behind closed doors. How are you supposed to ever build the support if you just shut off the whole population from the game? So there are still massive barriers, but I think certainly from there is interest there.
It's almost disheartening, really, when you see the decision makers of the most popular sport in Colombia so out of touch with the rest of the world. And I understand, and being Colombian, you're there as well culturally. There is still so much machismo, there's misogyny, it just sort of reeks and it finds its way into women's sports. And for me, the biggest, I guess, shocker is what we just witnessed in Europe, the Women's European Championship, England winning, hailed as a seminal moment for sport in that country, a massive victory professional women and professional women athletes, for footballers. In North America alone, Liga MX Femenil, very well supported by the Mexican Football Federation sponsors. They're attracting some of the top players in women's football. And South America is so far behind. So just in your opinion, you mentioned some of the players, Linda Caicedo for Colombia, the 17-year-old, like a star was born. You know, she can play, I think, on any team in the world. Is there a fear that players like her will just fall within the cracks and not be discovered?
I think that has happened many, many times. Yeah, it must have done. I mean, the whole structure of Colombian football, there must be so many girls who have the dream of being a footballer, but just don't have any support and see so many barriers. And at the end of the day, have to feed their families or provide for their families. So just abandon their dreams. And that must have happened many, countless times. And hearing some of the stories while making this documentary, it became blatantly clear. The machismo is rampant, and there are conversations where one of the presidents, one of the top dogs in Colombian football, described women's football as a breeding ground of lesbianism, where they're just a bunch of boozers. So I mean, these are the people who are running football. They don't. And there's nobody there to shape things up. Yeah. And this is the big problem with Colombian football as a whole. Until what you really need to do is take an axe and cut the roots and start again almost. But without that pressure, it's going to be hard for the new president to shake things up. But he can apply pressure, and he can link up some of the government organizations so that there is a structure there. But changing those attitudes of the guys in the Colombian Federation, the Colombian League, is going to be a massive challenge.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more. This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So I want to shift to men's football, the men's national team. This is a great segue to read one of your tweets. This is a great tweet that you wrote in January of 2022. And this is when the Colombian national team, they had just hired Reynaldo Rueda. And you know, it wasn't going so great. You're not sure what's going to happen. You don't, are they going to qualify? Is he the right man? In the end, they did not qualify, but this is what you wrote at the time. You wrote, "It's so simple to pin all the blame on Rueda, to pine for the 2012-2014 Peckerman glory years and pretend nobody was screaming for him to go. Not quite so easy to lift the carpet on Colombian football and take a closer look from top to bloody bottom at its rotten and perverse structure." I'll never forget that tweet, because I think it was somebody, for me, it was like, well, here's someone who moved from another country, is covering the culture and has witnessed this firsthand. You know, Colombia misses out on the World Cup. Like, going back to the original question for women's football, how critical a place is football in general right now in Colombia, not having been, not qualifying for the 2022 World Cup and the men's World Cup in Qatar. And with what you've described with sort of the problems organizationally, like, where is Colombian football right now?
In a bad place, to be honest. Not just the national team, but also the domestic game as well. Colombia is always going to produce talent. It's 50 million. There are 52 million people here, and it's a very rich football. It's got a very rich football culture, so it's always going to produce talent. But from my 10, 12 years here, trying to understand how that talent comes through, it's sad to see how everything that there is no structure. And a lot of these players, they might have all the talent in the world, but none of them are prepared for the next step up to leave Colombia. And it might be just simple things like they don't know how to pay a bill, or they don't know how to speak any words of English at all, or they don't know how to live by themselves. But the clubs aren't interested in this. Their agents aren't interested in this. It's just, quite often, the move that players get to a foreign club isn't in the best interest of the player at all. We've seen it many, many times again. Marlos Moreno, who was at Nacional in 2016, is a classic example. Right. It's a sad example of how he was just sold to the highest bidder without a proper plan on what his career would be like. But I think the problems with Colombian football go back way into history, into this sort of weird structure they have, where one man basically controls the whole game. He's called Alvaro Gonzalez. He controls 4 out of the 7 votes in the Football Federation. He's been there for 30, 40 years. You can't get rid of him. He doesn't want to go anywhere. His son's involved in football. His whole family's involved in football. And he's come out with some pretty shocking things over the years. And he runs the show as if it's his own country. And I don't think that's healthy for any organization, and no matter what it is. And it's not healthy for football. Missing out on the World Cup is huge, of course, because in many ways, especially coming after this period of 50 odd years of war, and you have the peace treaty, and then you've got a massively divided country, because we can't forget that for whatever reason, more than half the people voted against that peace accord, which sounds weird. No, you've got one of the longest running wars in the Western Hemisphere, and people didn't want to end it. But it just shows the division of the country, and even in the recent election, which pitted a left winger against someone, a right wing populist, it was pretty tight. And football was the glue that sort of held the country together. And I say that with a clause. I think it is the glue that holds the country together when things are going well. When things are going well, you see everyone coming together. And it's one of the only areas in such a class-ridden society where the country comes together and you see people piling into bars, no matter how rich they are or the colour of skin or anything. Yeah, when things are going bad, then you start to see the divisions coming through. But without the World Cup, I think a country the size of Colombia, it shows that there's something not quite right within football. That except for Italy, I'd probably say it's one of the biggest countries in the world that isn't going to be at the World Cup, right? And you must feel that yourself.
Of course, Colombia, Colombia is not going. This team wasn't going to go to the World Cup and compete to lift the trophy, but they had a World Cup caliber team. They should have at least been in the tournament, right? You look at some of the players, they're all in Europe. You have Luis Diaz like in his prime. It's a total shame. And here in the United States, the U.S. did not qualify for the 2018 World Cup, and it just changed everything. Now they're going to have, I think, the youngest team in Qatar. They essentially turned over a generation of players. And when I talk to my friends in Colombia, the question is, like, what are we going to do? Are we going to do that? Are we going to keep leaning on Falcao and James Rodriguez and sort of the old guard that really brought all the joy back to Colombia after 16 years without going to World Cup? So is there that possibility in your eyes, being on the ground there? Are there talks of we need to bring in a new generation of player before the sport gets away from us?
Yeah, well, I think that's always, whenever a country misses on the World Cup, you can't just return to the glory years. And like I said in that tweet, to sort of pine for what made us good back then. And this has happened so many times in Colombia's history after those great teams of the 90s. Mm-hmm. How many times did Francisco Maturana, the manager of the 1990 team, come back afterwards as manager, or Bolillo, his assistant? Yep. How many times did they go, okay, let's try something new? No, didn't work after three games. Let's get Bolillo back. And the amount of managers they rifled through in those years up until Peckham arrived was incredible. And there was never a process, because every single manager arrived with new players, with new ideas, with new tactics, and there was never a proper structure in place. Now, when you miss out on a World Cup like Colombia has just done, and as even bigger countries, historically speaking, have done, the best thing to do is reflect and to accept, we didn't qualify because of such a reason. And I just don't really see there being that process going on within Colombian football at any level, really. No, unfortunately, I don't know. No, they're not going to have to. They're not going to be playing Falcao. He's already
no. But they brought in a Peckerman assistant. So it's like they're going back to what they felt worked. What does that say? Does that show that the federation is sort of raising their hand and say, okay, we got it wrong. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to what worked before.
If they'd have done this 4 years ago, when Peckerman left, I think people would say, well, that makes sense, to do it 4 years later, having gone through two managers. I think it shows a bit of a sign of desperation for wanting to, and let's be honest, the only reason Lorenzo is manager is because he was Peckerman's assistant. He hasn't really achieved very much anywhere else. He did a good job at Melgar for a year and a bit, but really, let's not kid ourselves, he didn't get the job because of what he did at Melgar, a Peruvian mid-table team. So, again, yeah, I just don't think there's any sort of strategy or long-term planning for Colombian football because it's so disjointed and that there's one man at the top and he's surrounded with people in his echo chamber, in his comfort zone, who aren't applying that pressure for change. And if there isn't a change when things are going bad, then you're just going to end up repeating the problems. And yeah, that's the story at the top of the game. And at the bottom of the game, it's that this is a country with 52 million people and we've got 36 professional teams. So many of the breeding grounds for footballers were players like Wellington Ortiz, one of the greatest players of all time, come from and never seen professional football in their cities.
Right.
Football is concentrated in the biggest cities, not in particularly in the places where footballers are produced, like Chocó, like Tumaco, like Buenaventura. So it just seems, I mean, how can you have a country of 52 million people, only 36 professional teams? And it's so concentrated in certain parts of the country. So, yeah, until you grapple with those problems, I think you can cover up some of them. If Luis Diaz, for example, starts firing, because he hasn't really done it, certainly not in the World Cup qualifiers. He wasn't at his Liverpool or Porto form.
But the Copa America.
Copa America he did well. Copa America, he was great. He was very good. But he wasn't odd Copa America. It was six games to decide four qualifiers. So, I think it's going to be taking a pinch of salt, that Copa America. But and it was organized at the last minute with not fans. So,
right.
I just think that there are the Colombian Federation haven't really come to terms with or reflected in a professional way on why they're not at this World Cup. I think it's just easy to blame the manager because it's such a simple, why did he put Borja on in the 90th minute against Peru? I think football's a bit more complicated. Yeah.
So I knew I would be somewhat upset having you on the show. I knew it because you were going to talk just total truths about Colombian football and the reality sting. But I do want to end on this. We're going to get to the spot kick in a second after this last question. What have you learned from Colombia's football culture that you didn't already know, that you didn't know when you arrived? What is one takeaway that has really stuck with you in being in Colombia as long as you have and covering the sport there?
Ooh. Wow, that's a big question. I didn't really know that much about Colombian football when I first arrived. And I think that when it was almost like, I remember when I was about 10 or 11 years old and I first got into football and I just had to, buy all the magazines and just consume football all the time. And it was almost like reliving my teenage years let's find out who are the best players historically for America. De Carli and I just think for me it's more, I'm in a slightly odd position here where I'm the one of the only foreign journalists covering the game, and that sometimes is a blessing. It opens doors to me. Juan Carlos Osorio, I remember once meeting him and he was, come to Medellin and you can stop with me and we'll just go out and we'll talk about football all the time. And then, this clearly wouldn't happen if I'm just some normal journalist from, from Wheeler. So that it does open doors quite a lot. Sometimes it's not quite as helpful because there is, as they call it here, a rosca, like an old boys network, and if you're not part of that, or if and I understand that it's kind of hard for a lot of journalists to survive in Colombia and be critical And I hope I haven't come, I think I have come across as very critical of Colombian football, but I really am Colombian football's biggest fan.
Right.
And I love it. And I love it more than English football now, because I live it every single day.
Wow.
So that process has been, yeah, really enriching to dive into a new football culture and get to know it all and be treated. I've had a time of my life in Colombia. But I think it is hard for a lot of Colombian journalists to be critical, because that's not what the Colombian Federation and the league want to hear. And they are very good at closing doors to people who are critical to them. So in a way, I'm lucky because I have that independence.
Right.
And I can't just go and off wherever and do what I want.
Well, your candor is, I think, is what intrigued me the most about just following you on Twitter, reading your stories. You certainly seem like someone that was very brave and unafraid to say, speak a lot of the truths that happened in Colombian football. So it's been great to follow. Congratulations on the documentary as well, FIFA. I can't wait to see that one. And listen, Carl, with that, we're here to the spot kick. Are you ready? Oh. Remember, this is it. 5 questions. You can't waffle. You're at the spot. You've got to pick your corner. You're going down the middle. You're going to the left. Don't think about it too much, because the goalie will save it, or you'll lose the match in penalty. So, 5 questions. The first one, let's get to this.
I've not done any of my homework, so I'm not practicing my penalties.
I've saved. We're gonna go with the most important question first. Okay. Venezuelan arepas or Colombian arepas?
Oof. Venezuelan.
Oh,
yeah. Hey, sorry. I know that hurts, but
okay.
They've got a filling. They taste of yeah.
Fine. Okay.
So a good start.
No, so far, no. I think I would have saved that one. Okay, better England World Cup semifinal team, the 1990 squad or the 2018 side? Which team are you taking?
No, 1990. Yeah, 1990.
That was a good team. They were fun. Mm. Gasco,
yeah,
Gascoigne.
It was the
Waddle.
Uh huh.
Shilton.
Uh huh. Well, the reason I'm an Aston Villa fan is because when I was 8 years old, the first game I went to see was a Crewe Alexandra game, and David Platt was playing for them. And then shortly after, he signed for Aston Villa. And as an 8 year old, he was my hero. So that's how it all started. So yeah, David Platt's goal against Belgium was one of the most. Yeah.
He had a great tournament. All right. Third spot kick, Carl. Will James Rodriguez play in Europe again? Yes or no?
I mean, he really wants to. I don't think he should do. yes, he will. Yeah.
He will. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
He will.
Brave answer. Once again, I don't have that sort of confidence anymore in James Rodriguez, but you know, we'll see.
No, I don't. I don't. But yeah, I can see him having a disastrous loan spell somewhere.
So, yeah.
Where he plays about 3 games and gets injured.
Okay. Third spot kick. No, this is the fourth spot kick. Which city has the more dreary climate, Bogota or London?
Oh, no, London, definitely.
Really?
Yeah. Those 5 months of winter, brutal. It's one of the reasons I left England. I know a lot of people complain about Bogota weather, but I think it's a steady 18, 19 degrees all year round.
Yeah.
What's not to like? I mean, the rainy season is a pain in, because you never have dry feet. But other than that, I'd say Bogota's weather is yeah.
All right. I thought you would say, I'm not surprised by it. I think Bogota, I'm from Cali. My friends are from Cali. My family's from Cali. So anyone that moves to Bogota is constantly complaining about the weather compared to the nice warm weather in Cali. But all right, final spot kick, Carl. This is a tough one. As an Aston Villa fan and an Aston Villa supporter, you're building an all-time Aston Villa starting 11. Who is your center forward? Juan Pablo Angel or Dwight York?
Nah, I mean, yeah, again, you're going to be disappointed in me. And despite him walking out of us for Man United, which hurt me as much as it hurt John Gregory at the time when he said, if I had a gun, I'd have shot him. I'd have to say no. Because I think Angel arrived and he had that one really, really good season. Mm. He's all our... definitely York.
Yeah. That's tough. It's tough. I mean, York is a top guy. I mean, Angel, for me, when he was good at Aston Villa, it's what drew me to the Premier League at the time. It was an unbelievable story. And he had that first great year. I think he scored like 70 goals while he was there, though.
Something like that.
I mean, Dwight York is Dwight York. I mean, one of the top footballers, one of the top strikers the Premier League has probably ever seen. So I guess I can't blame you for that.
Exactly. Angel was great. And when he arrived, he had a lot of personal problems and he did really well to stick it out. And I think he was with us for about 6 years, which is quite a long time for. And at that time, it wasn't very common for, I mean, Asprey had been there in England and Rijkaard had been there. But it wasn't a destination that Colombians would go to like it is now. He was a great play for us, but York is possibly, no, he's in my all-time Aston Villa.
All right.
11 alongside Peter Wythe, so yeah.
Well, Carl Worswick, thank you so much for coming on Copa with Felipe Cardenas. Thank you for being my guest today. If you're listening, follow Carl on Twitter, C Worswick, at C Worswick. Look out for his documentary. When will we see the documentary, Carl?
I'm not sure. They've not told us, but it's a six-part documentary going out next year, I think, before the Women's World Cup. Each episode, it talks about... how wins the qualifying phase in each of the regions, but it's more than that. It's not just a highlights package and some behind the scenes stuff. There are a lot of stories about the background of players and NGOs that are working in women's football, the fans, that kind of thing. So I think it's going to be a really great show when it comes out, but I can't tell you yet. They haven't told me. So.
All right, we'll be on the lookout. Thanks for coming on, Carl. All the best.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.